Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here this morning with Aaron Porter, the Global VP of Agency Partnerships for Platform.sh. Good morning, Aaron. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks, Mark. How are you today?
Good. Nice background there. It looks like a beautiful sunny day where you are.
Yeah, and I actually have this wonderful south-facing window. So if I don't pull my blinds down, you can see these fancy light dots here. Yeah, that would just be straight in my face, sunshine. So,
well, hopefully,
let the sunshine fool you. I'm actually I'm tuning in today from the Great White North, Vancouver Island, British Columbia.
Ah, very nice. And I'm tuning in from San Francisco, the middle of the Bay Area. So, to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, and since you used the operative word brief, we'll just start off with my adventure in the cloud, if you will, and even sort of where I got started with the remote working, which we'll bring up later, I'm sure. So I started working in the cloud industry in around 2011, when I co-founded a platform as a service company in Helsinki, Finland.
Wow. So
yeah.
Then since then.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say since then. I mean, we talked before. I know you've been to a lot of places.
Yeah. So after that, we had operations in Helsinki, and then I spent a bit of time in Brussels, Belgium. And then ultimately I started working for a private cloud company just out of Washington, D.C., and was working a lot in the federal area and had some big partners like Red Hat and some others that maybe I don't need to give any gratuitous plugs or anything, but just, you know, great people that I worked with there. And then Platform.sh ended up expanding operations to the U.S. And I actually knew the team. I knew a lot of the core team from my adventures in Finland and Belgium. And so I came on board there almost 5 years ago to start their U.S. operations.
Oh, very cool. So let's talk about Platform.sh. First of all, you don't see .sh regularly, so tell us what that's about. And tell us what your product is, who your target audience is, all that stuff.
Yeah, great. So .sh, we get a lot. We get that all the time. And I actually want to commend you on not doing the most common thing is people will go, so what's with platform? And, you know, it drives some people a little bit battier than me. I don't really care. I would probably, you know, I give people a pass on that. But the real root of the .sh is that this is just kind of going back to It's partially our view of the way software and web applications and so on should be developed. And it's using this, it's really leveraging the cloud for automation, mm-hmm. as opposed to a more traditional practice of software development would be people logging into their Linux servers and working from the, wait for it, .sh shell, mm-hmm. right? So platform.sh is just kind of it's a very low level system admin-y type joke to people that have worked in the shell and that just kind of stuck as the name. Our core, you said, I believe you also asked the second part of the question was who our core users would be or the core offering.
And
it's really about that. It's the next step in cloud computing, right? So there are several models, but the first cloud computing model was, some people call it IaaS or IaaS, which is infrastructure as a service. And these are usually your global cloud providers like your AWS or your GCP or your Azure, or, you know, now they're a dime a dozen now, but Platform SH is a platform as a service. So there's the infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. And the high level is, yeah, so we've got AWS or GCP or any of these global cloud providers that are the infrastructure layer. And then you could think of almost like your Gmail or your Facebook or Twitter, something like that. That's basically software as a service, right? You're not mm-hmm. paying for it. And I mean, you're not paying money for it. You do pay with your identity, but that's a different topic altogether. and then the platform as a service is the abstraction layer between the infrastructure and the software. So what it really is it's taking away that need for some very deep system level administrators. And what this does for a user is, you know, if you're an application developer, you want to live in the world of creating code and creating experiences for your clients. You don't necessarily want to live in the world of networking servers and, you know, mounting file systems and all of that stuff. And in the past, there were these the system administrator types, and then there were the developer types. And sometimes they lived in both worlds, but oftentimes it was separate. And basically, you can automate most of your server or DevOps tasks and present that in a way so that your IT or your development team can just focus on creating code. And you know, you want to talk about like the changes that that can make to your prototyping or your iteration cycles, software development, all these things. It's just the next kind of leap forward in agile and whatever other buzzwordy type thing that you want to throw in there for application development.
Yeah, it seemed, I've been in that world, and it seemed like the bigger the company, the more likely that those two worlds were separated. And they had systems in place to request things from each other, right?
Yeah, 100. That's a great example. I mean, that's, you know, when you take sort of that antiquated system like that, where let's say you're trying to work with a team to sprint out a couple of features on your e-commerce site because Black Friday is around the corner and you're going to, you know, do 10 million in sales on one day. But then you have to submit a ticket to your IT team to create these different environments for you to test these new features. And you have to wait for all of those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking sometimes literally, you know, if you're bigger, especially government or university and big companies, something that could take weeks in the past can literally be done in, you know, a minute.
Yeah. Now someone would just go on and fire up your platform, right?
Exactly. You can create a clone a repository. A new environment is there, and you know something that literally could have taken up to 2 weeks before can be done in about 90 seconds.
Wow, where were you 20 years ago? When I needed you.
well, 20 years ago, you know, they were just getting around to virtual machines and VMware. Man, we had to get the containers out there. And,
yes,
but yeah.
So we'll switch now to remote work, since you obviously lived in a lot of places around the world. I'm assuming you've done a fair amount of working remotely. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been almost full-time remote for a decade. The private cloud company I worked in between the two platform as a service companies, that one I was about 70-30. I still went into the office every once in a while to check in, but there was really, you know, no need for me to work there. And I already have a history of working remotely. So it's been my life. It's been most of my professional IT career has been as a remote worker.
And your current company, platform.sh, do they promote remote work or is it something that happened because of the pandemic?
No, actually, platform.sh started out at its core very, very early on, it became a remote company. Mm. So we are, we say we're fully distributed. Technically, we still have one full office in Paris that I think six people go to every once in a while. But you know, we're around 250 employees globally distributed. And wow. It's, say, nine, for all intents and purposes, we could say 99%. Remote.
Wow. And is there anyone else in the Western Canada region near you, or are you all over there by yourself?
So actually it's quite funny because one of the people on my team, she lives in Blaine, Washington, which is just over the waterway from me, but technically she's further north than I am. So really? She's in Washington and right across the waterway, but she's as the latitude lines would have it, she's about, I think, 10 miles or so north of.
Interesting. I'll have to check that on a map. So everyone had to go remote about a year ago now. It's basically And you, I mean, you already were a remote company, but did that cause any hardships or roadblocks that Platform SH didn't quite expect?
For us, it was business operations as usual.
Really? Not a blip?
Not even a blip. Not a blip from the operational perspective, because that's just what we all do. That the new state of normal for everyone else is our, you know, our normal. But obviously with the huge shift to digital that, you know, was kind of imposed upon the public at large, that actually caused a lot more need for our services. So, but yeah, from the purely operational standpoint, there was no shift.
Wow. So your actually business has grown since the pandemic. Is that safe to assume?
We've been doing well, and nobody likes to talk about doing well in a hard time, because it's not a great way to be doing well, but it's a fact. There was a digital shift that occurred, and it just so happens that's that sort of shift is one of the, you know, our prime directives prior to the shift. So we've done well.
I've talked to several people that their business has grown since the pandemic. Just, and a lot of the people I deal with are in technology, so it's not uncommon. So you know, it's good and it's bad. People know now, maybe it's a place to go work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it doesn't come without its pitfalls, you know?
Yes,
and I know. I can wait for a couple of questions, or I can just throw some of those out there as you like.
Go ahead.
Well, working, not having a water cooler is difficult. And even I think the most introverted of us still need to have some sort of social connections. And since we end up spending, you know, a third of our lives with the people that we work with, it's natural that we want those connections to be there. Yeah. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of, to be a successful remote workers, there are several considerations. Mm-hmm. Because I think, I actually think that people will probably have a higher tendency to burn out working remotely than they will going into the office. Everybody thinks it's this great, you know, the panacea to all my problems. If only I could work from my couch, everything would be great. Well, it can be, but loss of social connection is real, and kind of feeling isolated and working in silos and things like that. Those are real problems, and they have to be dealt with. And that comes down to leadership, management, your team building, creating the opportunity for virtual water coolers, building some support with people. You're like, yeah, man. Sometimes you just have to yell and put your hands up in frustration because, you know, your priorities aren't this other team's priorities, and you have no way to go into their office and lean in on them and say, you know, we really need to get this done. So, you have to do things like that, but it's also really important. And I think anybody that's listening to this, if there was one thing I would have anybody remember is you have to have a work-life balance. Mm-hmm. When I started remote working, I think what newbies to remote working, we can't say we all do the same thing, but I have seen firsthand so many people go through this cycle of the newbie cycle, which is the first part is this imposter syndrome. Mm. Let's say, and assuming you are actually going to be a good dedicated worker, there are always people that are going to fall off for whatever reason anyway. But let's say you're the type that is predisposed to come in, you're going to do a good job wherever you are, you're going to work hard and things like that. Well, there's this imposter syndrome, and you're like, well, because I'm working from home, my boss isn't going to know that I'm getting, you know, I have to get these results. I have to get the results. So you're, you know, at 8 p.m., you're getting an email and I need to respond to this because I need to be results driven. I need to be results. No, you're going to burn yourself out. You need to set yourself some working hours, and you need to set your boundaries, and you need to stick to that, you know, and okay, in the middle of the day, you do have the flexibility to go to the supermarket if you need to. But you can tack that time on somewhere else. But you don't work from the time that you wake up in the morning until you go to bed and answer every email in between, because that is a surefire path to burning out.
Yeah, and the other thing I noticed is like when the newbie, because I've been doing it for a while too, they have a tendency to make it known that they're not goofing off, and right? Have you noticed that they make sure they, you know, they're always on, and they every now and then send out emails or ping you just to let you know that, yeah, I'm working, and, right?
Yeah,
they
don't exactly. Have- Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that's maybe a paradigm shift from, you know, a leadership position is something that I work with on my team is that I am results driven, and I try to instill that as a value that we as a team are results driven. I'm not a clock watcher. Mm-hmm. I really don't care. Actually, if we set out some goals together and you get all those goals done and it actually only took you 20 hours, you don't have to tell me that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'm happy with the result that we set out to get, and then we got there. Mm. And what it took to get there is, you know, that's great. And but on the opposite end of that is that if it truly took you 80 hours when it should have taken 40 hours, then we need to reevaluate how we're setting our goals. You know,
yeah. This is
so
true.
Yeah. But yeah, that whole, you know, I don't like the you know, let's be busy for the sake of being busy.
Yes.
Right. That's not productive. So
yeah, no, I agree with you. I think most people don't want to be micromanaged, which is, you know, and that's what causes is people making it look like they're busy as opposed to being busy with right. work. Right. Yeah. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So what do you think is the future of remote work in general? I mean, remote development's been here for a while, but remote work in general, I mean, you're obviously a proponent of it, but where do you think it goes, you know, once everything goes back to normal?
I don't know. I actually, it was weird because I was reading before pre-pandemic, you know, that they were expecting a huge growth in remote work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the exact numbers, so I could throw anything out and they would just be kind of made up. But something mm-hmm. in my mind tells me that they're expecting, like, I think it was like 30% increase mm-hmm. over the next couple of years. Well, instead of that happening, we had an 80% increase in 1 month period, right? But yeah, when we return to sort of some state of normalcy, I think that we will see, I think there's been a forced paradigm shift. And now I'm getting in the business of fortune telling, but let's just see if any of my predictions come to pass. I think a lot of employers are going to see that they can attract talent at a lower price by not necessarily expecting that talent to live in really expensive places.
True.
So the market potential of getting talent is going to be much more appealing, I think, and capable. And we've talked in the tech industry for years about, you know, sometimes the talent pool can be shallow, and maybe that's a global truth, but I would be willing to bet that at least part of that truth is that it's the expectation for these people to uproot and go places, and removing that requirement, all of a sudden, you know, we might find some more talented people at lower prices. And we've already seen the exodus start happening from California and some of these population dense areas where they're saying, oh, you know, I can move 5 hours across the border. I mean, I don't want to pick on San Francisco and Reno, but I know both of those places pretty well. And you mm-hmm. can say, okay, you know, San Francisco, you're looking at 1.5 million for a two bedroom, mm-hmm. 500 square, no, maybe a little bit more, 1,000 square foot place.
Yeah, that's all right.
You know, you over in Reno, not only do you not have, California state income tax, which is I think 11%, and Nevada is 0% for personal. Mm. But you can get a 4,000 square foot home with land for $500,000, $600,000. Yep. I mean, that appeals to a lot of people, you know, and understandably so.
Yeah.
So, I'd imagine there'd be some sort of hybrid, and you know, some people there will probably transition mostly remote. There will still be some offices. Those that do increase their remote culture, they probably have, you know, quarterly meetings or monthly meetings. And sometimes you have to be around, but not all the time. And
yeah, no,
that's what I would expect.
And living in the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm pretty sure the top income tax rate is 13.8%.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Which is sizable, especially after the feds take their chunk. So
yeah,
yes, we are seeing people leave the Bay Area. Yeah.
But it's a hugely desirable area and it's a great place to live. I've been there as well. But basic market economics, supply and demand. Well, San Francisco Peninsula isn't that big and they can't build more land. So that property is really, really valuable. So when any of the Silicon Valley companies want to get the top talent, just by default, they have to pay them so much more money just to be able to live there.
Yes.
And so somebody making $200,000, $300,000 in San Francisco is probably not that far off. If they're buying a home and digging in and creating roots, they're probably, their purchasing power isn't that much different than somebody living in, middle America and making $80,000 a year.
Right. No, you're right. I'm glad I bought a long time ago, but you're right. And what's happening is actually people are leaving the city of San Francisco and moving down to the suburbs.
Yeah.
So they can have, a yard and a house, a single family home, not a condo and things like that.
Yeah.
So, well, Aaron, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been great talking to you. Good luck to platform.sh. It looks like you're going to be busy for a while.
Yeah. All right, Mark. Well, thank you so much for reaching out. It was nice to meet you and have a chat. And please feel free to reach out anytime.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right.